of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
My job is to yammer on the radio.
Or questioning your judgment.
Rotten hell.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You're guaranteeing a victory for the Bruins.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. But they might be. When's the last time they made the playoffs?
I couldn't even begin to tell you.
I mean, I can't remember a time in the modern...
They made the conference final in 2012.
They did?
Against L.A., yeah.
No. I have no recollection.
How much you
want
to bet? How much you want to bet?
I was zero. You said it with such conviction, which is the key. I don't remember that.
Yeah, 2012, they made the conference final.
I mean, I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
And I follow this crap. I don't remember that at all.
That was 5 years ago.
Right.
What have they done since?
Nothing.
Oh, my God, are they garbage. Like, talk about a completely faceless, like, no identity, no history, no nothing franchise. Just getting that off my chest.
Well, you know what? We are here at the Garden. The Bruins do play tonight. So we thought we'd open it with some Bruins. So there you go. You let us right into it.
Woo!
Jimmy, there we go. This is, for those of you who don't know, this is what we do to sound the alarm for the Bruins people. This is a horn that we have placed up on the top of the Tobin Bridge. This goes out to Greater Saugus Revere area, that near North Shore area. And so that means we're talking Bruins. This is your chance to do it. Jimmy, you can hit it again.
Woo!
Okay, there it is, 617-779-0985. We're talking Bees because we haven't hit on them, you know, in the last couple of nights since they lost the other night in Nashville, which, you know, I'll spare you. How do you like Khudobin now? Yeah, Felga, where's Khudobin now? So maybe the Khudobin run is over, maybe, you think?
Could be. Yeah, look, I'm not basing that on one game, but clearly Rask before that had a couple of good games in a row. So if you're asking me, you know, I don't know if Khudobin's run in terms of good play is over, but I think Khudobin's run as the starter is over.
Okay.
I think
Rask look who the competition was. That Nashville team is filthy.
Yeah, and they're playing really well. So, Jimmy, you can release the hounds. Again, 617-779-0985. Thank you. I hope it's over. Mike, I mean, he should have been playing when he was playing, thank God. There's too many people who've hung on to Tuukka Rask as this guy. I still believe all of that, but Tuukka Rask is the better goalie. So if he's playing better, he should be the guy, and they're a better team for it. So if Khudobin goes on another run like that, meaning if he, you know, gets four or five straight starts, that means Rask has gone back in the toilet, right? So we'll see. I mean, the team is back being kind of healthy. Rask has his rest. The big thing about, you know, managing his workload. And so you're at home 8 of the next 10 games, Murray, and on paper you have some lambs in front of you. There's no excuse. Here's another chance. Yet another chance for Rask to look like a franchise goalie. Should be a layup, right? I mean, here's his chance to do it. So there's one thing. There's one thing. What else? That loss the other night, Murray, did you watch the game in Nashville?
Yeah.
So it was up against the Celtics. I can't remember who the Celtics.
I caught it the next day.
Celtics Bucks. Yeah, so, I mean, I was going back and forth, and, you know, when you do that, you tend to, you know, watch neither. But they weren't horrible the other night. They outshot Nashville like 40-25, something like that,
yeah.
And, boy, the third period got really interesting. They were down 4-0. Khudobin gets pulled. And they're down 4-0, and they climb back to 4-3 with, I don't know, like 10 minutes left in the third period. And, like, had real momentum, and we're all over them. And
who started that momentum? Who got that first goal?
Charlie.
That's right.
For the Bruins.
Yeah.
So, like, they showed some balls down there, I thought. I didn't think it was a bad loss because they really pulled. They fought all the way to the end. And at 4-3, Laviolette calls a timeout. And when Laviolette called a timeout, I said, I've seen this before. And, of course, Nashville scores within a minute, and now it's 5-3, and the game is over. So that loss in Nashville, it wasn't horrible, and it wasn't Khudobin's fault. They they got beat by big plays. I know that's sort of you don't usually say that in hockey, but they're all sort of breakaways and two-on-ones. Charlie hurt him in this game. He got caught pinching a couple times, which is, if you want a one-second guess on Charlie McAvoy, it's that. He gets caught up ice a little bit too much, and he did in that game. Cost him some odd man rushes. So here they are now, Murray. Rask is rested, resumed the job. They're at home 8 of the next 10 games. They have some lambs on the schedule. They have all these games in hand. You sort of flip from last year. Like, for example, they're 1 point behind Montreal for the third spot in their division, the playoff spot, and they have four games in hand.
Yes, you, this is where you got to go on a run and make it up.
What are you expecting?
Yes, you got to go on a run and make it up. And I said this to you the other day. The whole dynamic now with Montreal is becoming more and more interesting because not only is Montreal past them in the standings, and again, games in hand for the Bruins, so we'll see how that shakes out. They haven't even played them yet. They have not even played Montreal yet. And, you know, if those are the teams battling for third place, one of them's getting into the playoffs. Like, what you know, guaranteed, finishing third, you're going to get in. That's automatic. So you're going to play Montreal 3 times in 4 days in January, 3 times in about a week in January, forgive me. And, like, I think the whole thing with Claude now and Cassidy, all of that is coming back to the surface a little bit. Like, it could be the Bruins of Montreal for one of the final playoff spots in the conference.
I think this is kind of what I'm trying to get at is I think this is kind of a key stretch. It might be one of the stretches that defines their season. They have all these games in hand. I think they're going to wipe them out over this stretch. They're at home for 8 of 10, some beatable opponents on the schedule. Rask is rested and has resumed his job. You're getting healthy. And so this is sort of it. If Claude, the last couple of years, how would they do in this game, Murray?
Oh, this is the Thursday night dud. Even though they had beaten this team and they own them, and again, it's 11 straight. Tonight, oh, they lose 1-0.
This is the third, under Claude, this was the Thursday night wet fart. We're not showing up game. How many times did it happen?
A bad Colorado team comes in and lose 2-1 in overtime.
How many times did it happen?
Oh, God. It's the Thursday night dud. It's what you expected every time you came.
Thursday night racing stripe in your shorts.
Exactly. So let's see if they're truly different under Bruce Cassidy. Couple of personnel notes on the Bruins for you. I think they have to make a roster move today. I was under that impression. And Fluto wrote something about maybe Matt Bolesky being released. In the Herald, they said it might either be Matt Bolesky or Frank Vetrano, who would get released, like open to the league, and sent down to Providence if they pass through waivers. But, you know, any team would have a chance to claim these players. So that's sort of a big move, and it gets you thinking, you know, that Bolesky's even being mentioned for that. And the reason is because Jake DeBrusk is coming back, who you want to and should get in the lineup. The fact they're even mentioning Matt Bolesky, it just sort of goes back to, boy, what a bad move that was.
Disaster. That signing was a complete disaster.
Holy crap. DuPont had this note the other day. You know, this season the Bruins, with Bolesky out of the lineup, are 8-1-2. With Bolesky out of the lineup, they're 8-1-2. When he plays, they're 4-8-2. So, you know, that is a classic example, that Bolesky thing, Maz, of reaching for talent that isn't there. You know, just because you had a need. Like, the Patriots preach about this all the time. The Bruins needed a forward a couple years ago. They had the room under the cap. They had the money. And because it was a really down year, the biggest name on the board was Matt Bolesky, because he'd just gone off a big playoff run the year before with Anaheim, playing with Getzlaff and Perry, you know, one of the best lines in hockey. He gets on that line in the playoffs, puts up a bunch of points. And so he's one of the few viable forwards on the board. And you go get him and overpay him just because you had a need and he was there. As opposed to evaluating the player. Like, that's
the worst kind of mistake.
That's reaching for a need 101 when Belichick and the Patriots scold everybody about not drafting for need. Like, that's the classic example of
it. Yes, it's the worst kind of mistake. It's the one when you overvalue a player purely because you're desperate. And the real sin there to me is putting yourself in the spot where you know, you're short in other areas, and the Bruins at the time weren't starting to pump out some of these young guys like they are now. And all of a sudden, where do you go? You have nowhere to turn, so you go and spend money foolishly in a guy who really doesn't deserve it. So it's compounded. One, as you said, it's signing someone based purely on need. But the bigger sin is the need, the problem. You didn't draft well. You put yourself in a bad spot, and then you made it worse by going out and throwing that money at someone who didn't deserve it.
So $3.8 million a year. He got 5 years at $19 million, $3.8 million a year. He's mostly in the press box, it feels like, and when he's out there, the Bruins usually lose. And he might get released today. Again, I thought there was something coming down the pike today. If they activated DeBrusk, they'd have to release somebody, either he or Frank Vetrano. But he's a story. There's another big personnel miss that I want to get to that's coming up this week as well.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz. We want to appeal to your ears.
Blood force drum!
We're going to run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And they'll shovel it out to center ice. Watson with a shot blocked by Krug. 2 seconds, one, and the horn sounds here at the Bridgestone Arena. A furious rally by the Bruins in the third period, but ultimately it's the Predators that topple the Boston Bruins here tonight, 5-3.
The Sports Hub app. It's pretty snappy, getting a lot of positive reviews. Just pop it up, download it, and you're listening to Boston's Home for Sports. Plus, you get all of our podcasts, tweets, and more. It's available now in the App Store and Google Play. Search 98.5, the Sports Hub, to get it. And again, we're opening up Bruins today, 617-779-0985. Pete, lead us off.
Hey, Mike, was Torrey Krug's maintenance to reprogram him to play defense?
He kills him, man.
He jumps the pass at the end of the first, 20 seconds left, creates the 2-on-1, gives Nashville the 2-0 lead at the end of the period, and I just can't watch this guy play anymore. If Sweeney proves himself to be able to draft defensemen as so far he has been able to, make Krug a wing and put him on the power play as the D-man, but 20-plus minutes a night as a primary top four D for this guy is just, it has to stop.
Okay, so I think you hit on the point, Pete. Krug is a -9 worst on the team.
He is. Yeah, remember, he was a -10 like early in the year, when he was coming off the injury. And so, since that point, he's actually been even-ish. But -9, worst on the team.
So, again, Pete hit on the issue. It's the time on ice. He's used as a top four defenseman. So in terms of your defensive minutes, McAvoy, of course, leads you with 23. Krug is at 20. And I'm just trying to find Char. And Char is at 23, too. So Char actually averages a little bit more than McAvoy. So Char and McAvoy are both, call it, just under 24 minutes. And Krug's at 20. That's the issue. He should be a 15-minute-a-night third-pairing defenseman who plays on your power play.
Totally.
But he's a top four guy for you. And, you pay him like that, too, which is a problem. But I think that's the issue with him. It's just too much ice. He's being relied on to be too much. Fred in Auburn, what do you got for us on the Bees?
Yeah, listen, just to sign in for what Murray's saying, if you look at Arizona, and no doubt they're a problem organization, but they've beaten the Devils 5-0 lately. They beat the Kings. They just lost, I think it was an open net of 3-1 to San Jose. I mean, it's not a gimme. Arizona, they've got some young top six guys, Duclair. They've got some firepower up front that can score in a hurry. So I wouldn't be counting my chickens. And sometimes when you hear Murray sound off right off the bat as far as
exactly
terrible, they're going to lose, it's over. Arizona is a hungry team. They're well coached.
Okay, but listen, this ain't about Arizona. F Arizona. Arizona can kiss the underside of my ass as far as I'm concerned. That was way too much Arizona Coyote talk.
It's about the Bruins playing down to competition.
It's about the Bruins!
Yeah.
With the Thursday night, home, rested, everything lined up, wet fart, thank you for coming night.
But since Cassidy has taken over.
Under Julian, it was like clockwork.
Oh, sure.
Clockwork. Rested. At home, beatable opponent on a road trip. Everything lined up for you, and nothing.
The scheduled loss on a Monday after being on the road for three games.
And that we've given you the numbers. The home record under Cassidy has gone way up since Julian left. So for some reason, they're a better home team under Cassidy. But nights like this still scare the crap out of me.
Oh, I feel like it's gone away since he's taken over. It really has. I mean, look, I still have concerns about the team, and who wouldn't? But as long as they're healthy, I mean, they've looked so much better now that they're getting guys back. And the goaltending has been, thankfully Rask has been better. Arizona team sucks, Mike.
Long way to go for me to feel comfortable about the Bruins in any spot.
Well, listen, given my optimistic nature, I tend to lean on the side of them screwing it up tonight. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? How could you possibly, with the way they've played at spurts this year, how could you possibly think it's guaranteed?
Oh, my God. Bill and Southie. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, I just had two quick points to make. Well, one, is there anyone scarier on the ice than Chara handling the puck in his own zone? It's terrifying every time he does it. It should be one touch and out, or just drop the guy. He has great numbers, but he terrifies him.
But I know. The scary thing is Krug on the ice, 5-on-5, because he's killed you.
I do not disagree with. I don't disagree. And then the other thing is, talking about Bolesky, can we go back and look at the Sagan trade all these years ago and how that's helping us out now?
0.0, of course. The Sagan trade, man, we spent a lot of time on that, so there's no need to go back there. The only thing I would say, if it makes you feel any better, is that Sagan's not one in Dallas. They made the playoffs in one of his 3 years, and they suck again this year.
Yeah, and look, he was injured a chunk of it. Like, other than that first year where he was an MVP candidate, wasn't he? Where he had
finished sixth.
Point, Okay, so since that point, it doesn't feel like he's really flashed like he did at the beginning. And maybe it's just because the team's bad. But, you know, where do you go with that one? That was a colossal mistake.
So those, again, those don't really hurt. I mean, the return is just painful. So the return hurts, man. The return hurts. But the actual loss doesn't hurt until the guy starts winning. Joe Thornton never won. So I don't, like, feel the full pain of that one. Kessel started to win. This makes it feel a little bit different. Like, you can win with Phil Kessel. To this juncture, I don't know if you can win with Tyler Seguin. You know, maybe if he's the third, fourth guy like Kessel is now. You know, if he's surrounded by other guys who are better or more established or just winners, fine. If he's a, like, Kessel's a glorified role piece in Pittsburgh. A high scoring, a good one, but, you know, that's what he is there. So, but here's another person I'll second guess for you. And DuPont wrote this. And you watch the NHL, you and your kids, Maz, don't you watch the NHL Network and the highlight packages
sure,
and everything?
Sure, yes, absolutely.
Have you heard of a kid and watched a rookie with the Islanders named Matthew, I think it's Barzal is how they pronounce it?
I haven't seen a ton of them, no.
Matthew Barzal. I think he's a little undersized, but nasty. Just super skilled, shifty. Like, I see him on the highlight packs all the time. Because he's, well, DuPont says, he wrote this the other day, Spinorama alert. I'm eager to get my first look at dazzling rookie forward Matthew Barzal when the Islanders visit the Garden on Saturday. Barzal has 6 goals, 18 assists, and 24 points through 26 games. So he's almost point a game as a rookie, 24 points through 26 games. The Islanders drafted him at number 16 in the 2015 draft. Number 16 in the 2015 draft.
So this would be the spot immediately after the Bruins took their three guys.
You drafted that year, 13, 14, and 15.
Zboril, DeBrusque, and Sinishin were the three, right?
And this Barzal kid looks like he could be the
wow.
next thing.
Unbelievable.
Okay, and again, I've only watched highlights. I've only seen him on the top 10 plays and this sort of thing. I haven't sat down and watched an Islanders game, so I have no idea how he plays in his own zone or what anything. I don't know anything other than the kid is viciously skilled. He's nasty. And he's almost a point a game as a rookie, is going to have rookie of the year consideration. And looks like a legit stud. He was drafted at 16. You drafted 13, 14, 15. Zboril, DeBrusque, and Sinishin.
Oh, I mean, that's one that, you know, again, because Sinishin was a reach. If you go back to that draft at the time, everyone thought, what are they taking him for? He doesn't project until the next round. Like, that was a reach. And so if a kid like this went in the very next pick, oh, egg okay. on their face.
Well,
and,
so,
and again, Zboril hasn't done really anything for him yet either.
This is why I think DeBrusque is so huge for them. I mean, that their whole rebuild is centered around, if not that draft, the draft in this run, right? In this last couple of years where they've been a borderline playoff team. And so it's all centered around that. You got to hit on these picks. And that 2015 thing where they sat there because they wanted to trade up and get Hanifin. So I like their personnel evaluation there because Hanifin is a stud. They tried to trade up and get Hanifin. They thought they had the deal on draft night. It fell apart and they were sitting there with nothing, you know, with their Schmenzer in their hands, as we like to say. And they used all those picks. Two of the three aren't here yet. One is and shows promise, but the kid drafted right behind all those guys is on fire and could be a Rookie of the Year guy. And that's so we talk about some of the personnel things here. Bolesky is going to be on the table if he's released today. And that draft. And I've had people in the game tell me the Bruins blew that draft. Blew that draft. They have some good young players in the system, but that draft, yeesh. And that is, so watch for that kid on Saturday. Barzal. Matthew Barzal. And I'm sure you've seen the highlights, man, as you've just sort of glossed over it, but the kid has put up some highlight stuff. So there's that. You have that going for you, too, as well, Bruins fans.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Thanks for ending your work day with Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com.
Yeah, how do you guys feel about the lines? It feels like for the last 2 weeks they've had Pasternak up there with Bergeron and Marchand, and that line looks dangerous almost every time they step on the ice, and then the other three lines is just like, there's nothing there.
Because you don't have much on your team.
Yeah, no, I understand. I just feel like they, like, maybe in the last few minutes down a goal, like, go with that, but you should probably be spreading that out a little bit.
So I'm with you. I'll tell you, but Bobby, you know why they do it?
No, why?
They're petrified of Pasternak defensively. So they put him with Bergeron, who's good defensively, and Marchand, who's good in all three zones, and they feel that protects Pasternak, because he is still a, he looks like a newborn giraffe who's just been squirted out of his mother and doesn't know how to walk yet. Like a deer, you know, like a deer or a horse when they're born.
Legs everywhere.
They're born on their feet and the legs are everywhere and they're going down. And that's how Pasternak looks to me half the time. And he still can't, he still gives a puck away, you know, just about every other time he has it.
It's a good analogy. Did you think that up on your own?
Yeah, I did.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
No,
it is.
That is. He looks like a baby horse.
His ankles are cockeyed and he's fast. I guess he's a good skater, but he just, like, still, like, I still feel like he needs a skating lesson of some kind. When I see their lineup, though, you know what I see, Maz, right now?
See that? Well, go ahead.
I
was just going to say they can get away with it when they have Krejci and Backes in the lineup, because then they can, you know, they sort of spread out the veteran stability a little bit. And so you want to put Pasternak with the first group. I think they can pull it off. And a lot of that depends on DeBrusk and Bjork, and those guys are with Krejci tonight, I gather, right? They're going to play with him tonight. So I think it works. It can work when you have everybody healthy. When you don't, it's a huge problem.
Well, I think Pasternak should be on a different line. But I think they feel he's too much of a liability, and they want to play him with Bergeron to protect him. Just my feeling. But when I look at their lineup, I look and I go, oh, I actually kind of like it. I see what I just see a semblance of something coming in, a nice blend that I like. You know, again, Bergeron, Marchand, Pasternak, and then it's Krejci with Bjork and DeBrusk. Both those kids are 20, 21. I think they can both play. I think Bjork can play. I think he's good. DeBrusk, a little bit more of a project, but he really looked good before he got hurt just here. And then it's Nash, Backes, and Heinen. I think Heinen has a real chance, and he's a young kid. And Backes, as long as he's a third-line guy, I think that's what he is at this stage of his career. And that fourth line is Corrali, Schaller, and Achari. Corrali, I like. I love Corrali as a fourth liner. I think he's a great energy player. And again, young kid, so is Achari. And so I sort of look at it and I go, yeah, Bergeron, Krejci, Marchand, Backes on one hand. Veteran, legit, pretty good talent. Pasternak, DeBrusk, Bjork, Heinen, like four kids right there. In their early 20s, late teens, who can play. And I look at it and I go, meh, all right, this is sort of the idea.
So you're saying ideally, though, Pasternak should be on the second line with Krejci.
Yep.
And have Bjork back with, back with Marchand and Bergeron.
That's what I would do.
Well, look, that's how they started the year.
But I think they feel Krejci, Pasternak, DeBrusk is too offensive, not enough. You know, I think that's what's going on there.
See, the only problem they have with this group is that when they have what they had earlier in the year and they lose anybody for any length of time, it gets thin real fast. And I say lose anybody, I'm talking about a veteran guy. You lose a Krejci or a Backes for any length of time, and Krejci's overpaid and hasn't played like he's capable of playing for a long time. But he's still a veteran NHL player who generally has a feel of what the hell's going on out there.
Still a ton of personnel second-guessing to do with this team. If Bolesky is sat out again tonight or released coming up here, you look back at that move and say, what are you doing? And that 2015 draft, where you draft guys at 13, 14, 15, and the 16th player is a Rookie of the Year candidate here. And then there's another guy I think people want to tell us about in 2015. Go ahead, Sean. Sean and Lowell.
Hey, Mike. Love your show. It wasn't just Boswell in that 15th draft. It was Connor and Chabot taking 16th and 17th right after that. Those guys are lighting it up. They're playing for Winnipeg and Ottawa.
And those are legit. They're already established. Are they in their rookie years?
Kyle Connor is scoring goals. Shabazz playing for Ottawa. And, that Boston could have picked with 16, 17, in 18 and still missed all those players, you know?
So, you know, the fair draft second guesses are guys that are taken right after you. When you draft 17 and someone's drafted 42 and you missed on them, like, I find that a harder second guess because everyone missed on them. But you're sitting right there and you take those three guys, and the guys taken right after them are three guys taken right after them are all legit in the league. You know, those are fair second guesses. Mike and Wilburn wants to follow up on that. Go, Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I remember that Barzal was ranked ninth in that draft. Ninth-ranked prospect in that draft, and I was looking at the TV with a bunch of my buddies. I'm like, what are they doing? Because I have a bunch of buddies that played Quebec Major Junior League from Northern New Hampshire that I know. And I'm like, I'm sitting there, this kid's got skill. What are they doing? Because they do desperately need a young center. to follow the Bergeron, the Krejci, and now the Backes that's eventually going to go, and then hopefully not near future. But
well, watch this kid play on Saturday night. He's pretty nasty. I was going to say he's undersized, but he's not really. 6 feet, 190, that's good size in the NHL nowadays. So, like, I don't know what they were scared of there.
Well, and the guy they reached on, the last of the three they took was Sinishin. I mean, that's the one that was the reach. At least that's the way I remember it. Tell me. My recollection at the time was that Sinishin was projected much later in the draft, and I say much later, mid to late second round, and everyone said, what the hell the Bruins doing taking him there? And now you're telling me that the next two or three guys taken in the draft are good players? I mean, that's a bad gamble.
And I think the kid, the Connor, who was the other one that was mentioned? Again, my draft, I'm not a great draft guy in any sport.
Connor White?
I can always go back 2 or 3 years later.
Colin White. Kyle Connor went 17 to Winnipeg.
Well, one of them won the Hobie, I think. Kyle Connor won the Hobie, the Hobie Baker. So it's not like these were, you know, some guys buried in Europe or something. The guy won the stinking Hobie Baker Award. You know, everyone knew about him. But again, I'm not great with drafts unless we're 2 or 3 years later, and then I can tell you blew it, and then I'll pound the crap out of it. Other than that, you got to go to Adam Jones, starting at 7 o'clock usually here, 6 o'clock on 98.5 The Sports Hub. He's got all the college stuff. Mike in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, how are you?
Hi, Mike. What do you got?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I just think you're way too totally overall negative with the Bruins completely. I mean, you got guys calling in, nitpicking about Zdeno Chara stick-handling in his own end when Chara's getting huge raves all over national media in Canada and on NHL Network about his play all season long and how he's mentored Charlie, you know, Chubby over there. And I just happen to think, when you think of all the injuries the Bruins have come through, okay, and this has been a disaster, second most injuries in hockey, only to Anaheim Ducks, okay, phenomenal job by Bruce Cassidy. If it wasn't for Gerard Gallant in Las Vegas, he'd be the runaway coach of the year, okay? And you take a look at what they've done here with the kids and the talent and getting healthy and having 3 to 4 games in hand on their competition. You're about to see a very good season going forward from this point. If you want to nitpick about everything and make it sound like they're a last-place team below Buffalo drafting for the first-round pick, it's just so typical of you and your show. And I have to disagree with Maserati again also. By the way, Sinishin was a good pick. He's not even 20 years old yet. I think he is 20 years old. Why don't you give a little time to marinate in Providence, and he'll come along just fine, along with Zorbo also.
Okay, yeah, Mike, everything you said was right except for that last thing. I mean, it's a young man's game. Younger guys are coming into the league sooner and making a bigger impact. It's more of a young man's game than it's ever been.
I mean, how's DeBrusk here?
I was going to say, all these other kids are up. And all these other kids that they missed on are up.
Charlie McAvoy's in the league. He's playing like a 5-year veteran.
They're all the same age. So don't give me that crap.
And what was McAvoy? The 13th pick in the draft? So he was picked in the same neighborhood as those guys.
Yeah. So, and look. Maybe,
different draft, but.
Maybe they'll be late bloomers. But in this day and age, when you're drafted there, and 3 years later, if they're not in the league, or they're not anywhere close, you have a right to start looking at that. But everything else the caller said? Yeah, he's right. We nitpick.
Yeah, let him marinate, man.
We nitpick. We can be critical. I don't know if it's negative, but it's definitely critical. Overall, they've overachieved. They've overachieved, given just the insane amount of injuries. And some of those lineups they were putting out there a couple weeks ago were just literally 4A lineups. I mean, where you could say, when we looked at them, 10 of the 12 guys were AHL guys. And between Cassidy doing what he did with the goalies and other things, they have their head above water. So overall, they're overachieving. There's no question about it. So we'll continue with this. You want to keep weighing in on Bruins? You can. You absolutely can. It's 617-779-0985. We're going to give you a rarity here coming up next on Felger and Maz, and that's a guest. And I want to do this because, and it's a football-related thing. It's a Patriots-related thing. People who know Kerry Byrne from Cold Hard Football Facts,
yep,
came up with this great groundbreaking stat that I really believe in and I think really holds water and is a great stat, and that is passer rating differential. To determine what you are as a championship caliber team. Basically, it's how you pass the ball minus how you defend the pass. And the teams that have the best combination of those two things generally go the farthest. Because it's a passing league and it's all about the pass. And he uncovered that years and years and years ago. And it really holds true year in, year out. What's your passing game? What's your pass defense? Kerry Byrne has a new one. He has a new metric and he's been applying it here. And it may rival the passer rating differential.
You going to tell me what it is, or are we going to wait for Kerry to tell us?
We're going to wait to tell you what exactly what it is. So he has a new groundbreaking metric, and it applies to gambling as well. It applies to the point spreads. So if you like money, as we like to say, you want to listen to Kerry Byrne coming up next here on Felger and Maz.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
He used to write for something called Cold Hard Football Facts. That's what he's known for. He now writes for Fan Cred Sports, which is, again, aligned to my minor league social media app, as I like to joke around, Fan Cred Sports, of which I'm an investor, for disclosure. But that's who Kerry Byrne writes for now, and we can find his material on Fan Cred. And he's come up with something called an intelligence index, Maz, an intelligence index. And again, Kerry Byrne was the one that brought us the passer rating stuff, which I do love and I do think works.
Good thing they don't use the intelligence index on us.
So now we have the intelligence index. And if you go to FanCred Sports right now, again, which I'm an investor in, you will find Kerry's latest post, which is entitled NFL Intelligence Index, : The Patriots are smart, football fans are dumb. Kerry, explain yourself.
Felger, Maz, how you doing, guys?
Good.
You know,
good.
Several years ago, you know, at Cold Hard Football Facts, I wanted to find out who are the smartest, most efficient, most well-coached teams in football. And conversely, who are the dumbest, most inefficient, most poorly coached teams in football. And we came up with a way to do it. I don't want to get into the minutiae of how it's done. But one of the surprising outcomes of it was that not only do smart teams win football games, they also win games against the spread. Conversely, dumb teams lose football games and lose football games against the spread. It's remarkable. It's consistent. And year after year, the Patriots are number one on the intelligence index. They're right up there. They were number one last year. They're number one again this year. Not only that, the Patriots last year, guys, had the best record against the spread in football. They went 13-3 against the spread in the regular season, 3-0 in the postseason, and this year they're 8-4 against the spread. So that's 24-7 against the spread over the course of 2 years. That's a 774 winning percentage against the spread for those of you keeping score at home. That's not supposed to happen in the NFL. And specifically, it's not supposed to happen to very good teams. It's usually undervalued teams, teams that surprise us, like this year's Eagles or Vikings, that come out of nowhere and win against the spread because people don't realize how good they are. So what we found is that fans around the country are either hate the Patriots so much, they just don't want to bet on them, they're consistently betting against the Patriots, and they're getting hammered. The Patriots are winning against the spread, not only winning at an incredible rate, but winning against the spread at an incredible rate, because they are smarter, more efficient, and more well-coached than any other team in football, and fans around the country don't understand it, don't get it, and it's been this way for almost 20 years now, and they just keep laughing all the way to the bank. Or fans who follow them, who bet on them, are laughing all the way to the bank.
Kerry, give me your top five teams in the NFL in your intelligence index.
The top five teams right now are New England, Baltimore, which is a surprise. Baltimore is a surprise this year. Not usually, you know, a pretty good team, but not usually one of the smartest teams. The LA Rams, a total surprise, came out of nowhere. Sean McVay is the coach of the year in the NFL. The Rams were 30th on the intelligence index last year with Jeff Fisher and Jim Fossil. They're number three this year. They're actually a one a couple weeks ago. The Rams are number three. Jacksonville, another surprise, number four. And Philadelphia, number five. So these teams are not only all probably playoff bound, four of them are definitely playoff bound. They also combined, the five smartest teams in football are 38-21-1 against the spread, winning almost 65% of NFL games against
the
spread.
You're not generally a tout, but on your site, and you've been posting where these teams rank in their intelligence index, and you've been handicapping these games, and you've been crushing it with this intelligence index.
We've been crushing it with a bunch of indicators. You know, the passer rating differential you guys have talked about and we've promoted for years is the greatest indicator of championship potential in all of sports, passer rating differential, which you can get.
So give me the top five in that right now.
In passer rating differential?
Yes, sir.
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but I can look it up real quick. But I know the Patriots, who were dead last after week one, they were like negative 78 after losing to the Chiefs in week one. I think they're number two right now. Actually, here it is. Philadelphia number one, New England number two, the Rams number three, Minnesota number four, and the Chargers, surprisingly, rising fast at number five. But, you know, four of those teams are Super Bowl contenders, right? The
you
Eagles,
bet.
The Rams,
you bet.
The Vikings, the Patriots.
And Kerry, it's all about how you pass and defend the pass. But anyway, you've been killing it on your
efficiency, though. It's not about volume. People look at how many yards you pass for and how many receiving yards, guys. It's all about efficiency. And the intelligence index, which kills it, kills it. We're our mental mismatches, smart team versus dumb team. Felger, 11-3 against the spread this year. It's all about efficiency in the NFL, and that's why, again, football, the Patriots are smart. Football fans are dumb. Football fans don't know, even analysts don't know what wins and loses games in the NFL. They look at the wrong numbers.
Okay, so Kerry, in as simple a manner as possible, how does this intelligence index work? Because it sounds very subjective.
It's not very subjective. It's completely analytical, completely no subjectivity at all, completely objective. We look at how efficiently you play defense, how hard opponents need to work to score points against you, and then we look at how easily you score points. We call that defensive efficiency bendability. You have a bend but don't break defense. We look at how efficiently you score points, scoreability. The difference between those two numbers is your intelligence. It tells you who's playing the best, most efficiently in all phases of the game. And what we find is smart teams tend to win the turnover battle, play well in the red zone, produce in all phases of special teams, commit few penalties, all the little factors that separate winners and losers in the NFL. It's mastery of situational football. We've quantified, in a very easy-to-understand term, mastery of situational football, and teams that master situational football win, and teams that don't lose. Because, guys, in the NFL is not high school football. It's not the SEC, where Alabama obviously has more talent than Vanderbilt every year. Right? The difference between the Browns and the Patriots in talent, other than the quarterback, really is not that great. But the Patriots are smarter, more efficient, more well-coached, and the Browns are a basket case of inefficiency. They're the dumbest team in football. We see this year after year.
In the abstract, I agree with that, Kerry. Totally.
But it's not even the abstract, Mike. We've quantified it. We've quantified and shown it year after year.
But what you're saying is that, generally speaking, the bend but don't break defense is... It's the best defense because you're making the opponent work hard for their points.
Exactly. And conversely, offensively, you're efficiently turning yards into points. Okay. Great example. The Bills last week mustered just 3 points, 268 yards of offense. That's an average of 90 yards per point scored. Almost. They were dreadful. If the Patriots had played that inefficiently in offense last week, they would have scored not even 5 points.
And so look, he doesn't count the individual penalties. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. He doesn't count the individual penalties. He doesn't count the individual turnovers. But if you gain that many yards and only score 3 points,
you must be dumb.
There's only one reason you're not scoring points, and that is you suck in the red zone, or you turn the ball over, or you committed stupid penalties, or your coach is an imbecile, right? So it just comes out in the wash.
Okay, so Kerry, this relates to the yards versus points. Right? This is ultimately what's at the core of this thing.
Yep.
So I guess my question to you is, doesn't this favor teams that are good at special teams? For example,
that's part of the mix. That's a part of the mix. So if you're always, if you're taking the ball over for the sake of argument, okay, if you're always getting the ball in your own 35 instead of your own 25, that's 10 fewer yards you have to go to score a touchdown.
Okay.
And so that's all part of it. A special team is part of it. Turnovers are part of it. It's all the little hidden yards in football, guys, because, again, the Patriots from 1 to 53, again, with the exception of quarterback, right, so from 2 to 53, are not necessarily more talented than any other team, but they just are more efficient. And this is, and the surprise for me when I ran this number, when we started doing it years ago, is not that efficient teams win games, but they win against the spread, guys, and fans around the country, I think it's because they hate the Patriots so much. The Patriots should be the most overvalued team in football. They've been the winningest team in football ever over the last 17 years. They should be the most overvalued team, but they're 24-7 against the spread over the last two seasons. Fans just don't want to admit they're that good or just hate them so much they don't want to bet on them. And
Kerry,
people are betting against the Patriots and getting hammered on it.
Okay, quickly, 30 seconds. Between the intelligence index and your passer rating differential, you think the Pats must be a shoo-in for the Super Bowl.
I didn't think it was the start of the season, right? But, their defense has come along. And I'm not a shill for the Patriots. I know people think I am. But year after year, they're among the best in football at the numbers that win and lose games, the quality stats, we call them. Again, you can get all these at FanCred. Download the FanCred app. You can get all this stuff. And the Patriots right now, every week, are looking more and more like a Super Bowl champion, Felga.
Okay. Kerry Byrne, thanks again. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
We've had him on a lot over the years. Again, he now writes for FanCred, of which I'm an investor. I just have to say that for disclosure purposes. And go read this thing about this intelligence index. Like, I've been following it. It's hard to explain, so I haven't really done it yet. But
well, no, it makes sense.
He's been crushing it. He's been crushing it with this thing. So just there's that.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What do you know? You're at the office late again. Because when the company's all yours, so's the worry. This is when the real job's just beginning. Like having to answer all of your employees' health insurance questions. Yeah, forgot you had to do that, didn't you? Not to worry. Anthem Blue Cross has real people your team can talk to. Ah, the cleaning crew is here. Shall we call it a day?
For all the things that keep you up at night, Anthem has a solution. Real people, empowered to get you on the right track. Anthem Blue Cross. Rest easy. Click the banner to learn more.